And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, Psaki, Biden's mouthpiece, said Abbott was bluffing about sending the undocumented to Washington until he unloaded a bus in front of the White House. Today's April 12th, 102nd day of the year. 263 days remain till the end of the year. On this day in 240, Shapur I becomes co-emperor of the Sasanian Empire with his father Ardashir I. 467, Antemius is elevated to emperor of the Western Roman Empire. 627, King Edward of Northumbria is converted to Christianity by Paulinus, the Bishop of York. In the year 1012, Duke Oldric of Bohemia deposes and blinds his brother, Jaromir, who flees to Poland. 1204, the Crusaders of the Fourth Crusade breach the walls of Constantinople and entered the city. They completely occupy the city the next day. In 1608, the Union flag, also known as the Union Jack, is adopted as the flag of English and Scottish ships. 1776, American Revolution, with the Halifax Resolves, North Carolina Provincial Congress authorizes its congressional delegation to vote for independence from Britain. In 1807, the Froberg Mutiny ends when the remaining mutineers blew up the magazine of Fort Ricasoli. And for those who are not familiar with the Froberg Mutiny, it was a mutiny within the British Armed Forces staged between the 4th and the 12th of April in 1807 at Fort Ricasoli on the island of Malta, which was in a British protectorate. It was done by the Froberg Regiment, been formed using dubious methods with personnel recruited from various nationalities in Albania and the Ottoman Empire. Troops weren't happy with their rank and pay. Mutiny lasted 8 days, during which several people were killed and the fort was damaged. Mutiny was eventually put down and the ringleaders were executed. It was considered the most serious mutiny in the Napoleonic Wars. Now, the Froberg Regiment was formed by a French royalist in 1803. His name was Gustave de Montjoie, claimed he was the German Count Froberg. Secretary of War gave him permission to raise a regiment for service on Malta, which he did in Albania and the Christian parts of the Ottoman Empire. Basically, it was he hired a bunch of folks, put on uniforms, and march around and look important. 1820, Alexander Ypsilantis is declared leader of the Felica Eteria, a secret organization whose purpose was to overthrow Ottoman rule in Greece. 1831, soldiers marching on the Bruton Suspension Bridge in Manchester, England, caused it to collapse. That wasn't good. 1861, American Civil War. Today was the Battle of Fort Sumter. The war begins with the Confederate forces firing on Fort Sumter in the harbor of Charleston, South Carolina. 1862, American Civil War. The Andrews Raid, also known as the Great Locomotive Chase, occurs on this date. Starts from Big Shanty, Georgia, which is now Kennesaw. 1864, American Civil War. The Battle of Fort Pillow. Confederate forces killed most of the African-American soldiers that surrendered at Fort Pillow, Tennessee. 1865, American Civil War. Mobile, Alabama falls to the Union Army. 1877, the United Kingdom annexes Transvaal. 1800, one day after its enactment by Congress, President McKinley signs the Forica Act, which gives Puerto Rico limited self-rule. 1910, SMS Zereni, one of the last pre-dreadnought battleships built by the Austro-Hungarian Navy, is launched. 1917, World War I. Canadian forces successfully complete the taking of Vimy Ridge from the Germans. Now, the Battle of Vimy Ridge was part of the Battle of Arras in the North Pas-de-Calais region of France during the First World War. Main occupants in this particular battle were the four divisions of the Canadian Corps and the First Army against three divisions of the German Sixth Army. Battle took place from the 9th to the 12th of April 1917 at the beginning of the Battle of Arras. That was the first attack of the Nivelle Offensive, which was intended to attract German reserves from the French before the French attempted a decisive offensive on the Aisne and the Chemin des Dames ridge further south. Now, Canadian Corps was to capture the German-held high ground of the ridge, an escarpment on the northern flank of the Arras front. This would, of course, protect the 1st Army and the 3rd Army further south from German enfilade fire. Then the final objective was a fortified knoll outside the village of Givenchy in Gohel, which fell to the Canadians on April 12th. German 6th Army then retreated to the Ypres-Maricout line. Shanghai Massacre of 1927. Chiang Kai-shek orders the Chinese Communist Party members executed in Shanghai, which ended the First United Front. 1927, Rock Springs, Texas is hit by F-5 tornado that destroys 235 out of the 247 buildings in town, kills 72 townspeople, and injures 205. That was the third deadliest tornado in Texas history. 1928, the Bremen, a German Junkers W-33 type aircraft, takes off for the first successful transatlantic aeroplane flight from east to west. 1934, the strongest surface wind gust in the world at the time of 231 miles per hour is measured on the summit of Mount Washington in New Hampshire. That record has since been broken. 1934, the U.S. Autolite strike begins, culminating in a five-day melee between Ohio National Guard and 6,000 strikers and picketers. 1937, Sir Frank Whittle ground tests the first jet engine designed to power an aircraft. He did this in Rugby, England. On this day in 1945, President Franklin D. Roosevelt dies in office. Vice President Harry, can I fit you for a suit? Truman becomes president upon Roosevelt's death. 1945, World War II, the U.S. Ninth Army under Generals William Simpson crosses the Elbe River astride Magdeburg and reaches Tangamunde, just 50 miles from Berlin. On this day in 1955, the polio vaccine developed by Dr. Jonas Salk is declared safe and effective. 1961, the space race. Soviet cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin becomes the first human to travel into outer space, performed the first crewed orbital flight in Vostok 1. 1963, the Soviet nuclear-powered submarine K-33 collides with the Finnish merchant vessel MS Finnklipper in the Danish Straits. 1970, the Soviet submarine K-8, carrying four nuclear torpedoes, sinks in the Bay of Biscay, 4 days after it had a fire on board. 1980, the Americo-Liberian government of Liberia is violently deposed. 1980, Trans-Brazil Flight 303, a Boeing 727, crashes on approach to Herculio Luz International Airport in Florianópolis, Brazil. 55 out of the 58 people on board are killed. 1980, Canadian runner and athlete Terry Fox begins his Marathon of Hope run at St. John's. 1981, first launch of a space shuttle, Columbia, takes place. This is STS. Mission number one. 1983, Harold Washington is elected the first black mayor in Chicago. 1990, Jim Gehry's 20th Century Dinosaurs exhibition opens at the Smithsonian Institute National Museum of Natural History in Washington. He is the only sculptor ever invited to present a solo exhibition there. He clearly knew somebody. 1992, the Euro Disney Resort officially opens with the theme park Euro Disneyland. The resort and the park's name are subsequently changed to Disneyland Paris. 1999, President Bill Clinton is cited for contempt of court for giving intentionally false statements in a civil lawsuit. He's later fined and disbarred. 2002, a suicide bomber blows herself up at the entrance to Jerusalem's Mahane Yehuda Market, killing 7 and wounding 104. 2007, a suicide bomber penetrates the Green Zone and detonates in a cafeteria within a parliament building, killing Iraqi member of parliament Mohammed Awad and wounding more than 20 other people. 2009, Zimbabwe officially abandons Zimbabwean dollars, its official currency. 2010, Murano derailment. A rail accident in South Tyrol kills 9 and injures another 28. 2013, two suicide bombers killed 3 Chadian soldiers and injured dozens of civilians in a market at Kidal in Mali. And in 2014, the Great Fire of Valparaiso ravages the Chilean city of Valparaiso, killing 16, displacing nearly 10,000 and destroying over 2,000 homes. I don't know they ever discovered what caused the fire in the first place, but it had a major impact. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Children's Day in Bolivia. Christian Feast Day, Adoniram Judson in the Episcopal Church. Alfarius, Blessed Angelo Carletti di Chivasso. Erkimbode, Pope Julius, Teresa of the Andes, Zeno of Verona. Commemoration of the first human in space by Yuri Gagarin. It's Cosmonautics Day in Russia. International Day of Human Space Flight. Yuri's Night, which is internationally observed. Halifax Day in North Carolina. And National Redemption Day in Liberia. Okay, let's see what else we got. In 1065, pilgrims under Bishop Gunther of Bamberg reached Jerusalem. 1229, Queen Blanche of Castile and Earl Raymond VII of Toulouse signed a peace treaty. 1545, the French king, Francois I, orders Protestants of Vaudois to be killed. 1713, a Dutch state general signs a peace with France. Netherlands loses Orange Princedom. 1770, the British Parliament repealed the Townshend Revenue Act, which had fueled opposition to British rule in colonial America. 1782, the Battle of Los Santos. British fleet under Admiral George Rodney defeats the French fleet under Comte de Grasse off Dominica in the West Indies. Prevents a planned French and Spanish invasion of Jamaica. 1787, Philadelphia's Free African Society is formed. 1811, the first U.S. colonists on the Pacific coast arrive at Cape Disappointment in Washington. 1844, Texas envoys sign a treaty of annexation with the U.S. 1857, on this date, French novelist Gustave Flaubert's first novel and masterpiece, Madame Bovary, is published in book form. 1859, Hibernia Savings and Loan Society of San Francisco was incorporated. 1863, there's a gunboat battle at Bayou Teche in Louisiana. 1864, Battle of Blair's Landing in Louisiana. 1872, on this date, Jesse James Gang robs a bank in Columbia, Kentucky. Steals $1,500, which was a fair amount in those days. One person's killed. This day in 1877, the catcher's mask was first used in a baseball game. In 1883, French troops under Lieutenant Colonel Bougna de Bordes occupy Bamako in Senegal. In 1892, George Blinkensderfer patents the portable typewriter. 1893, the massacre of Hohenwerkern's Kurt von Francois, colonial governor of German Southwest Africa, which is now Namibia, leads an attack by 225 Schutztruppe soldiers on NAMA leader Heinrich Wittboy's headquarters at Hohenwerkern's. Shelling of the village causes tremendous civilian casualties. Wittboy escapes and wages several months of guerrilla war against the German forces. 1894, the British and the Belgians have a secret agreement on dividing Central Africa between the two countries. 1896, Stamasia Potrisi is the first woman to win a marathon. Did it in 5 minutes and 30 seconds in Athens. 1898, the Army transfers Yerba Buena Island in San Francisco Bay to the Navy. 1905, the French Dufault brothers test the helicopter. 1907, in Switzerland, Parliament passes a new army bill reorganizing the nation's forces into a standing militia with training required of all males. 1908, a fire at the Boston Blacking Company, which produced leather dyes, is spread by high winds, kills 19, makes 17,000 homeless in Chelsea, Massachusetts. 1909, Philadelphia's Scheib Park, later had its name changed to Connie Mack Stadium, opens up. 1911, the first nonstop London to Paris flight took place on this date. Pierre Preer was the pilot, did it in 3 hours and 56 minutes. 1916, Irish nationalist activist and poet Roger Casement boards the submarine U-19 at Wilhelmshaven in Germany, bound for a rendezvous with Odd at Tralee. 1919, British Parliament passes a 48-hour work week and guarantees minimum wages. 1926, the Dutch Catholic radio broadcast, KRO, is formed. This date, 1927, Kuomintang leader Chiang Kai-shek began a counter-revolution in Shanghai. 1931, Spanish voters reject the monarchy. 1933, Moffett Field Air Station is commissioned on this date. 1935, Germany prohibits the publication of non-Aryan writers. 1935, Royal Proclamation sets the design of Canada's new Jubilee Silver Dollar. 1935 also saw the first flight of the Bristol Blenheim. 1938 saw the first U.S. law passed requiring medical tests for marriage licenses. It was in New York, as you might guess. 1940, Italy annexes Albania. 1942, Japan kills about 400 Filipino officers in Bataan. 1943, the Allies conquer Susa in North Africa. 'Tis outright massacres during that time period. In 1943, the Dutch Catholic University, Nijmegen, is closed. 1945, Canadian troops liberate the Nazi concentration camp of Westerbork in the Netherlands. 1946, Syria gains independence from France. 1951, the Israeli Knesset officially designates April 13th as Holocaust Day. 1961, Douglas MacArthur declined the offer to become baseball commissioner. 1963, saw the police in Birmingham, Alabama use dogs and cattle prods on peaceful demonstrators. In 1966, on this date, we had the first B-52 bombing of North Vietnam. In 1973, saw France officially recognizing North Vietnam. Also in 73, Sudan adopted a constitution, and Swaziland suspended their constitution. Now, let's see. In 1980, the U.S. Olympic Committee endorses a boycott of the Moscow Olympic Games. 1980 saw Samuel Doe take control of Liberia in a coup d'etat. Ended over 130 years of national democratic presidential succession. 1982 saw three CBS employees shot to death in a New York City parking lot. I don't think that was ever solved. 1987 saw Texaco file for bankruptcy. And on that particular note, I think we've come to the end of today's little history segment. April saw a lot of activity, not the least of which was either the assassination or the escape of Adolf Hitler, depending on which... theory you believe. We were talking about the fact that there's evidence of a very advanced nuclear reactor found that's millions of years old. And that raises a lot of questions. You know, it's all been taken for granted that humans evolved on Earth along with all the other creatures that live here. Archaeologists have been working for years to trace our roots through history, trying to find that evolutionary link between modern humans and the other primates that live on this planet. But there's a growing amount of evidence that there's a missing link, which may not be on or from this planet. Ecologist, researcher, and author Dr. Ellis Silva wrote a book titled Humans Are Not From Earth, where he went into detail on a lot of the evidence that's in question. Now, some of his points are definitely intriguing, though you may not agree with all of them. His theory is that our ancestors came or were brought here from some other planet. And if that's the case, there's several theories as to why we came to be here. Maybe we're descended from interstellar explorers who settled here. Might be refugees from an interplanetary war. Maybe we're subjects of a genetic engineering experiment by some other race. Or maybe this is a prison planet. Either way, when you look at all the evidence, it becomes apparent we may not have entirely evolved here, and at least some of our ancestors may not even be from this planet. Now, much of the evidence centers on the fact that even though we're supposed to have evolved here, we're very poorly adapted to life on this planet. We spend a lot of energy and effort trying to make our environment suitable for us or to protect ourselves from the natural environment. If we did indeed evolve here, then we should be already perfectly suited for the environment without the necessity of any of the great lengths we've gone to change the environment. For example, the sun. Even though it furnishes heat, it also damages our eyes. Ultraviolet light is generally known to cause cataracts. And cataracts affect every human population on the planet. They're a leading cause of blindness in the developing world. Quite common, not only in the tropics where we supposedly originated, but also in more temperate regions. It's quite strange that we seem to have developed no resistance to them whatsoever. Most other animals, even those that spend all day in the sun, rarely get cataracts. And if they do get them, it's usually due to a congenital condition rather than something that develops later in life. Sun also burns our skin. If we go outside, we have to wear clothing or some sort of protection to avoid burns from too much exposure to damaging UV light from the sun. All other surface-dwelling animals on the planet, except those modified through selective breeding, have natural protection from either thick body hair or scales that limit their exposure to UV light. Case of elephants and rhinos, they've learned to coat themselves with mud or sand for protection. And if we travel or migrate away from the areas of intense sun, we have a similar issue, but now it's with cold. We don't have any natural means of protecting ourselves from the cold, so we have to cover ourselves up to keep warm or risk dying from hypothermia. Humans are the only ones who have to put on what many call other skins to protect us from the harsh nature of the Earth's climate. No other creature on the planet is vulnerable and dependent on climate conditions and the vagaries of the weather, except humans. Without clothing, people in most parts of the Earth are doomed to death in a very short time. So whatever planet we came from must have had a very little axial tilt and a pretty round orbit around its sun, so it'd be very little of any distinctive seasonal changes. And it had to have a perpetual protective cloud cover, or be orbiting a sun of a type that produces considerably less ultraviolet radiation than our sun does. Another bit of evidence that we didn't evolve here is the prevalence of back pain and other musculoskeletal issues. Most adult humans experience back pain at some time in their life. About half of working people suffer from chronic back pain. Anthropologists claim that all of our back problems stem from the fact we're bipedal and walk upright, which strains our back. Now, this doesn't make sense, though, because earlier hominins, the ones we supposedly evolved from, have been walking upright for millions of years. British anthropologist Mary Leakey found the footprints of bipedal hominins in Tanzania believed to be between 3.6 and 3.8 million years old. In fact, Homo naledi, one of the earliest members of the genus Homo that lived about 3 million years ago, was probably better at walking than we are. He had very long legs and an outward flaring pelvis that moved the hip muscles away from the hip joints and gave him more leverage. And when you compare our skeletons to that of Neanderthal, our closest evolutionary relative, there really is a huge difference. Neanderthals had heavy, robust bone structure and were heavily muscled in the shoulders, arms, legs, and necks. By comparison, modern humans have relatively light bone structure with thinner walls and smaller joints. And you'd think if we really did evolve on Earth, our bones and muscles would have thickened and strengthened by now. Now, this suggests that humans may actually have evolved on a planet with considerably lower gravity. About 60% of Earth is what has been estimated. And it seems our biological clock is also off a little bit. According to researchers, the human body clock, or the circadian rhythm, the cycle that tells our bodies when to sleep, wake, eat, and regulates many physiological processes, is actually closer to 25 hours than it is to the Earth's 24-hour day. There was a study where they put people in rooms with no access to daylight or timekeeping. They were allowed to put the lights on and off when they wanted and sleep when they wanted to. Within about 2 weeks, everybody settled into a 25-hour day cycle. By contrast, researchers at Nagoya University in Japan did experiments with roosters that crow every morning at dawn. They kept the birds under 24 hours of dim light conditions for 2 weeks. After that period of time, they noticed they were still running on a 23.8-hour day, which is, frankly, pretty close to 24 hours. But maybe the most compelling evidence of all that we're not from Earth or genetically engineered is in our DNA. DNA is actually made out of two long twisted strands that contain complementary genetic information. Genes are segments of DNA that are passed down from parents to children and conferred traits of the parents to the offspring. And genes are organized and packaged in units called chromosomes. All higher primates and hominoids have 48 chromosomes, but Homo sapiens only have 46. So you have to ask yourself, how did that happen? How did they get lost? Russian geneticists have determined that that's just not possible. Two of our chromosomes are fused together, and this is not something that happens naturally. And key human chromosomes appear to have been flipped. They were literally cut loose in certain places, turned on in, and reinserted and refused into the chromosomes to make them whole again. And this is not a mutation. In fact, it looks more like a modification to those that have studied such things. In the Human Genome Project, it's been shown that at least 223 human genes do not have the required predecessor in a genomic evolutionary tree. Scientists are able to trace the evolutionary progress from bacteria to invertebrates to vertebrates and finally modern humans. And these 223 genes are completely missing in the invertebrate phase. In other words, in a relatively recent time as evolution goes, modern humans acquired an extra 223 genes not through gradual evolution but as an insertion of genetic material. And finally, humans have over 4,000 genetic defects. No other species comes anywhere near that number. Chimpanzees, our closest living genetic relative, only have 4. Our mitochondrial DNA proves we've existed as a species for only about 150,000 years. So how did over 4,000 genetic defects work their way into the human gene pool when such genome-wide defects are rare to non-existence in wild and natural species? So many genetic issues, it's really quite amazing we've been able to stay viable as a species. But it does raise the question, is the human, as we know it, something that was genetically built, for lack of a better term? Well, in this little segment, we've started with the question of whether the Earth is hollow and inhabited by an advanced civilization. Is the moon an ancient artificial satellite? have more advanced civilizations lived on this planet before, and are humans aliens? So at this point, there is evidence that everything that we know about our planet and our species is incorrect. Now, what exactly would it mean if even one of these theories that I have outlined are true? And frankly, what would it mean if they were all true? Would it change the way you live your life? Would it change the fact that most people still have to work and struggle to keep their families fed and housed? Now, is there a, let's call it a big conspiracy theory where the people in positions of authority know all about all this and keep it secret? It raises a lot of questions that we just don't have answers to. It does also raise the questions. What would happen if it turned out that we evolved on some other planet? Would we try to go there? Is it possible that someone brought our ancestors here for whatever reason? That certainly raises many questions we just simply don't have the answer to. Well, let's turn to ...9/11. You know, there was a number of mysteries that still haven't been solved about that event. What would happen if it turned out that evidence existed showing our top officials in the Pentagon lied about 9/11. How would the American people react? Well, that would, of course, depend on the nature of the lie. Some lies might be looked at as of little consequence if they lied to cover up some mistake they made. That's also understandable. And lies like that are told all the time by people in authority. But what if that lie was told to cover up something far worse? Something that might mean that our entire foreign policy and domestic policy since 9/11 had been based on a lie about what happened on that date. See, one of the questions that's never been answered. A lot of people saw a large white airplane flying over the White House at about the same time as the attack on the Pentagon. This mystery plane, as it's been called, was reported on CNN. Well, you can't believe anything they say. They lie when the truth would help them better. But it was also reported on ABC and NBC and then ignored. Even a 9/11 commission report didn't mention it. Now, in 2006, an independent researcher in L.A. notified his congressman, Adam No Neck Schiff, about this plane, asked him to write to the Air Force and see what they knew about it. And he did, amazingly. Then he got a letter dated November 8, 2006, who said Air Force officials have no knowledge about this airplane. A year later, September 12, 2007, television journalist John King, who had given the CNN report about the plane on 9/11, gave a new report on Anderson Cooper 360 that showed that reply by the Air Force was a lie. And he knew it was a lie. He gave irrefutable proof by means of film and testimony from a retired Air Force officer the plane was a U.S. Air Force plane with most advanced electronic capabilities of anything we had in our inventory. So, why does answering this question provide evidence the official story about 9/11 was not true? Because part of that story was that the attack on the Pentagon, said to have been a strike by American Flight 77, was a complete surprise. According to one official, the Pentagon was simply not aware this aircraft was coming our way. Now, this is the center of our military power. And it didn't know there was a plane heading inbound. That was the reason given for not evacuating the Pentagon. And, you know, this was a very serious lapse because, according to all reports, 125 people in the Pentagon were killed, and 92 of those were on the first floor. Therefore, if an evacuation order had been given, even a minute or so before the attack, most of those people probably would have escaped. Now, Pentagon officials, of course, were excused from culpability for those deaths on the assumption the attack was a surprise. In other words, they didn't have any idea there was a plane heading directly at the Pentagon. Now, the revelation of the Air Force plane with its extraordinary capabilities, flying over the White House just a few miles away, certainly undermined that claim. According to the official report put out by the National Transportation Safety Board, the attacking airplane executed a 330-degree downward spiral before it hit the Pentagon. And that spiral took, by best estimates, 3 minutes and 2 seconds. And even if this plane didn't have the means to prevent the attack, it certainly would have been able to tell officials in the Pentagon to get the hell out of the building, there was something on the way. Besides showing the claim the attack was a surprise to be a lie, the revelation of the plane's presence over the White House provided the occasion for military officials to tell another lie. Having already lied to Congressman Adam No Neck Schiff, Pentagon officials repeated the lie to CNN. According to John King, if you ask the Pentagon, they'll insist it wasn't a military aircraft. And yet, over the White House is a no-fly zone, which means there are no aircraft supposed to be there. And for Pentagon officials to continue to lie about this in the face of indisputable evidence to the contrary suggests they're covering up something that they don't dare reveal, and they're in fact telling news agencies to back off and quit reporting about this episode. And as you might guess, those champions of truth and justice, CNN, ABC, and NBC, backed off. Just like they have done on the Hunter Biden laptop. Well, the story, though, is out now. Mainstream television shows reveal for all the world to see the fact that Pentagon officials have constantly lied about that plane flying over the White House that morning. And this lie clearly suggests the entire official story about the Pentagon attack is also a lie. Now, there's been an essay published online in April 2007. It's called The 9/11 Mystery Plane. And that appears to be the basis of John King's report. Now, although King did mention this particular article, he did show a photograph of the white plane that was included in the article. And he identified in regard to that white plane the same 3 points and in the same order as the article did. That plane had a U.S. flag painted on the tail. There was a blue stripe and insignia on the fuselage. Now, there are quite a number of questions that are still outstanding about 9/11. And you can't keep secrets forever. It just can't be done. And it turns out, evidence has come to light, the CIA has destroyed evidence in the form of audio tapes that would have been necessary to conduct an actual, unbiased, official 9/11 investigation. Now, starting in 2002, the CIA conducted interrogations of captured al-Qaeda operatives, including Abu Zubaydah and Ramzi bin al-Shabib, at undisclosed CIA prisons. And, of course, they used what are laughingly referred to as enhanced interrogation techniques. In other words, they beat the crap out of them until they talked. Some of these methods included waterboarding, which induces a sensation of drowning in an unlucky individual. And for some reason, they videotaped these interrogations. However, in 2005, Jose Rodriguez, the CIA's director of operations, ordered the tapes destroyed. And you have to ask yourself why. Well, according to CIA Director Michael Hayden, the tapes posed a serious security risk. And for benefit of the press, he went into more detail about his remark. He explained if the tapes became public, that would expose CIA officials and their families to retaliation from al-Qaeda and its sympathizers. Of course, reporters who worship at the trough, so to speak, hung on his every word, because if they contradicted him, they might not get future interviews. Now, Hayden claimed the CIA had followed the letter of the law and notified the appropriate committee heads in Congress before they destroyed the evidence. But this was immediately disputed by the top two members of the House Intelligence Committee. And in a January 2008 article in the New York Times, these two senior officials categorically stated the CIA never informed about any taped interrogations despite the repeated requests for all pertinent information about the captured al-Qaeda operatives who were then in CIA custody. Now, just like with the Kennedy assassination, the Warren Commission, the CIA and the FBI both lied. And when questioned, it was for the good of the country. Now, you have to ask yourself, how is keeping this information secret for the good of the country? Well, if in fact there were errors made by our leaders, it's like they used to say, what's good for General Motors is good for the USA. Well, what's good for the CIA is good for the USA. Now, there have been a number of books written that talk about problems with the official story of 9/11. And even the major publishing companies have limited distribution of these books. I've got a source I go to for almost any book I want, going back into the early 20th century. I've never had a problem getting a book until I started asking questions about 9/11. And then I'm told that such books don't exist, even when I show them proof that it does. Now, this Phantom Plane, you have to ask yourself, why was there a necessity of having a plane over the White House during that attack, and how did they know in time to be there? Now, there's new evidence that exposed serious discrepancies in the Pentagon's previous testimony before the House Intelligence Committee on May 2003. According to those hearings, Air Force Colonel Alan Scott told the commission that F-16 fighters had been scrambled from Langley to Air Force Base near Hampton, Virginia at 9:24 and were airborne by 9:30. And their purpose was to intercept Flight 77. Nor had Major General Larry Arnold testified at the same hearing, and he confirmed the times. But he stated the Langley fighters were sent to protect Washington from Flight 93. Now, the new evidence was in the form of NORAD, North American Air Defense Command, audio tapes from 9/11, which the government had been secretly sitting on for a long time. A court order finally ordered them to be handed over to the 9/11 Commission late in the investigation. And when the panel reviewed those tapes in June of 2004, they discovered a previously unknown transmission, which came the basis for a completely new element in the story. And this was called the Phantom Plane Scenario. Now, that transmission supposedly proves that in one instance where the FAA did alert NORAD in the case of hijacked Flight 11, FAA got it wrong and passed incorrect information, sent NORAD on a wild goose chase after a non-existent airplane. According to the report, somebody at the FAA mistakenly notified NORAD at 9:24 that Flight 11 was still in the air. In other words, it had not crashed into the North Tower. It was heading south toward Washington. Well, based on this false information, NORAD scrambled three F-16s from Langley to intercept southbound Flight 11, which was supposedly a threat to the nation's capital. They were armed, and the intercept was supposed to happen near Baltimore. Well, at this point, there was a bizarre screw-up, one that's never been explained. Instead of handing off the Langley fighters to air traffic controllers in the Washington, D.C. areas, local controllers sent the fighters to a military training airspace over the Atlantic known as Whiskey 386. And this would explain why the fighters failed to arrive in time to defend against incoming Flight 77, which in the meantime mysteriously appeared on radar screens southwest of the Capitol. Well, a similar scenario had unfolded earlier in case of the F-15 scramble from Otis. Instead of flying directly to Manhattan, the two fighters ended up in a holding pattern off Long Island, more than 100 miles from the World Trade Center. In other words, the attacks on the World Trade Center could have been prevented, if not for what's being viewed as screw-ups by the FAA. Now, this new disclosure was a major change to the official story and certainly embarrassed the Pentagon, because it contradicted earlier testimony by Colonel Scott and Generals Richard Myers, Ralph Eberhardt, and Larry Arnold, none of whom had previously mentioned the Phantom plane. Indeed, when Arnold was recalled for his second appearance before the commission in June of 2004, he still didn't have his facts straight, and this was 3 years after the event. Now, he had been coached by panel members, and his inability to recall details that as a NORAD commander he should have known caused shock and outrage on the panel. According to the Washington Post, the commission and staffers were convinced the Pentagon deliberately deceived them. Suspicion of wrongdoing ran so deep that the 10-member commission in a secret meeting at the end of its tenure in summer of 2004 debated referring the matter to the Justice Department for criminal investigation. John Farmer, who was one of the commissioners, said, "I was shocked at how different the truth was from the way it was described to us." But of course, none of this outrage made it into the 9/11 commission report. The report merely states the general's previous testimony was incorrect, and of course we have to cover for our generals. Although much has been made of this loss of face by the Pentagon, what's really going on, according to many, is the military is briefly suffering a little embarrassment experienced primarily by a few scapegoats. And if the scapegoats are viewed as the cause of all the problems, this removes the suspicion of guilt for treason and murder from everybody else in the military. A close reading of the 9/11 Commission report shows its main objective appeared to be to exonerate the Pentagon brass of responsibility for the breach of security on September 11th. And that's why the latest about-face by the Commission heads discussed earlier is so important. When they accused the CIA of obstruction, it was a radical departure from the bland, non-confrontational style of the final report, which didn't point any fingers except at the FAA. In fact, it bent over backward to exonerate the Pentagon and CIA from any culpability at all. The 9/11 Commission report was a thoroughly sanitized account. There's no question about that. Crucially, the commission failed to subject the NORAD tapes to forensic analysis, which ought to have been the priority given the disparities in the previous testimony, as shown by the tapes. The 9/11 commission report fails to provide even one checkable source to substantiate the NORAD tapes as evidence. That's the same problem that everybody ran into in regard to the CIA interrogations. In absence of independent confirmation, there's no assurance that the NORAD tapes are authentic. Perhaps they were created to substantiate the corrected story. Maybe the Phantom plane that everybody kept making references to played no part in the earlier timeline because maybe its part in the story is a fabrication. And that, of course, would explain why the generals failed to mention it in their testimony. And why as late as 2004, General Arnold knew nothing about it. The issue here is whether the Pentagon and the 9/11 Commission were telling the truth. Added problem is that even if we wish to believe the latest version of the official narrative, this means we also have to accept the Joint Chiefs deliberately deceived the panel and the nation for nearly 3 years. It's usually assumed if the generals lied, it was to conceal their own incompetence. I mean, why else would they expose themselves to the treasonous charge of implementing a stand-down by understating the FAA's degree of negligence? Which is what they did in the beginning. If the FAA was in fact even more culpable, why was nothing done? This makes no sense and should increase our skepticism about every facet of the official story. Indeed, we're compelled to consider the admitted sinister alternative explanation that generals lied to conceal the complicity in the 9/11 attack. Maybe they were involved in staging it. This, of course, would explain why their previous incorrect testimony and their unreserved acceptance of the new timeline took place. In fact, one of the NORAD generals was actually heard to remark, "The real story is better than the one we told." Excuse me. Given the latest version had the effect of exonerating the generals, you can appreciate his point of view, but was it better for the nation? And then there's another serious problem. Assuming the FAA was guilty of gross negligence on 9/11, why was nobody ever held accountable? Not a single FAA official was ever prosecuted, dismissed, demoted, or even reprimanded. If, in fact, they were so incompetent, why didn't that happen? Did the Bush administration refrain from disciplining the FAA because this would have begun a legal process of discovery and appeal involving the scrutiny of relevant documents by the courts and release of real information to the public? You know, instead of handing out dismissals and demotions, the Bush administration rewarded a number of officials and officers who were responsible positions on 9/11. CIA Director George Tenet was awarded the Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest honor, despite presiding over the worst security failure in U.S. history. The Bush administration's policy of rewarding failure is perverse and violated the most basic principles of good government. Strongly suggests the Bush White House purchased the cooperation and silence of numerous officials by handing out bribes. Spectacular compensation rewards were also offered to families of the victims. Cash payments averaged $1.8 million each. But to get that money, you had to sign a waiver forfeiting your right to bring a legal action. That raises a lot of questions. On that note, we've come to the end of today's show. We'll be back tomorrow, and once again, you'll be listening to Ken Hudnall on the Ken Hudnall Show. Until then, have a truly great evening.